Okay. The general topic of my presentation will be using just-in-time compilers in modern browsers to inject arbitrary code fragments on the fly for later using it for code reuse attacks. More specifically, so just-in-time compiler is a process of creating native code out of a higher level language that is JavaScript in our case. JIT compiler is used by all modern browsers to improve the performance of JavaScript code. However, JIT compilation also creates some security threats for browsers. Namely, JIT compilers must make sure that no attacker control data from the JavaScript can end up in the native code after compilation. There have been already several attack techniques that illustrated how this can be done. However, modern browsers already defend against this type of attacks. In this presentation, I will show yet another way how we are able to emit arbitrary 3-byte gadgets. And also, we will consider modern defense, code reuse defenses, such as non-readable code, to do so. In the end, I will also introduce defense techniques that will help JIT compilers to defend against our proposed technique. So before I go into details, I will quickly overview code reuse attacks. The basic code reuse attack, as name suggests, attacker reuses already existing code from executable and imported libraries. For example, in the following setup of the memory, attacker first identifies all the gadgets that he and function pointers that he needs for code reuse attack. Gadgets are small sequence of assembly instructions, usually ending with the return instruction. Return instruction helps attacker to chain multiple of these gadgets together. Having all these gadgets, the attacker then overrides the stack to chain multiple gadgets together and also provide parameters for gadgets and functions. And finally, diverts the control flow to the first gadget of the gadget chain, triggering the execution. So basic assumption of basic code reuse attack is that attacker must know the addresses of these gadgets in advance. The most widely used defense technique against basic code reuse is address space layout randomization, or simply ASLR. ASLR randomizes the base addresses of the code, and by doing so, forbids the attacker to know the addresses of the gadgets in advance. However, ASLR has major limitation, namely that leaking even a single pointer from the code reveals all the information and addresses from the neighboring gadgets. This has been fixed by introducing fine-grained code randomization, which randomizes the code inside memory segments. Thus, attacker cannot know, by leaking a pointer, cannot know information about neighboring segments. However, all fine-grained code randomization have been shown to be ineffective against dynamic code reuse attack. For example, in JITROP, attacker uses memory disclosure vulnerability multiple times from JavaScript to acquire arbitrary memory reads. Having arbitrary memory reads, attacker then does pointer chasing to leak as many code pointers as possible, and then follows these code pointers to read code pages and find gadgets and function pointers on the fly. Having all the gadgets ready, the attackers then chains them together and diverts the control flow to trigger execution of the gadget chain. The main strength of JITROP is that attacker can leak addresses of the gadgets and function pointers after they have been already randomized. To fix this issue, several researchers propose similar defense techniques which deal with this problem. I will call this new class of defense XNR, as in executable and non-readable. And also, as name suggests, XNR, the main principle behind XNR is to mark code pages as non-readable, and also to forbid attacker to guess or compute the addresses of gadgets. XNR further randomizes the code and also hides code pointers. By doing so, XNR successfully defends against JITROP, and by forbidding the attacker to execute the first step of the JITROP, that is finding the gadgets. However, is reading the code necessary for successful code reuse attacks? As it seems, and as it was demonstrated by JitSpring, it's not necessary. For example, in JitSpring, attacker uses predictable code output of JavaScript compilers and sprays its own code in the executable portions of the memory. For example, as it is shown on the figure, attacker can create a huge JavaScript function which contains lots of integer constants. After compilation, these integer constants will end up as part of assembly instructions, namely embedded fields of assembly instructions. And diverting the control flow to any of these constants will execute arbitrary code that attacker puts there. For example, in our example, this sprayed code is an OPSLED, which is a long sequence of NOP instructions, usually followed by a shell code. Creating large enough NOPSLED will help attacker to guess code pages more easily. However, JitSpring attacks doesn't work anymore in modern browsers because they employ a few defense techniques. For example, Internet Explorer and Chrome use constant blinding. That is, instead of, for example, if in our example, this integer constant is controlled by the attacker, instead of directly moving it to the target register, it first moves integer constant XORed with a random key to the register, and then to restore the original value, it emits another XOR instruction. Therefore, target register is set to the correct value, but attacker doesn't have the ability to spray the code by providing integer constants. Another defense technique that is used by Internet Explorer only is NOP insertion, and it further diversifies the code. We will later see this implication of our attack technique. However, there is a limitation in constant blinding. That is, because of performance reasons, only constants that are larger than the 2 bytes are diversified, are blinded. This limitation was used by the authors of the paper, The Devil is in the Constants. In this paper, authors realized that it's not necessary to encode return instruction as part of their integer constant. Instead, what they did was encode the required 2-byte instruction sequence as part of return statement in JavaScript, and then diverting the control flow to this 2-byte constant will execute the required instruction. And after following the regular control flows, an epilogue would be executed and final the return instruction. And if epilogue doesn't break the execution, as it was the case in Firefox and Internet Explorer, the attacker gets arbitrary 2-byte length gadgets, excluding the return instruction. However, there are a few limitations with this technique. First, that it requires readable code. And we cannot, it's not usable in our context when we assume external defenses, that is, code segments of the memory are not readable. Another limitation is aligned return instructions. In this attack, attackers use aligned return instructions. Therefore, if there is some control flow integrity checks between 2-byte gadget and return instruction, this attack technique will fail. In the second part of this presentation, I will now introduce how attacker is able to emit 3-byte gadgets. And in this attack technique, I will assume that XNR is applied to the code sections of the memory, therefore we cannot read it. And as a threat model, I will assume that we have arbitrary memory read. So all previous attack techniques concentrated on embedded fields to inject arbitrary values in JIT compiled code. Consequently, constant blinding is also applied only on embedded values. However, in our work, we will focus more on the displacement field. Displacement field in x86 instruction is used in address computation and stores an offset from some base address register. Some types of displacement fields in x86 instructions are instructions accessing memory and control flow instructions. We will be using control flow instructions in our technique. Examples of control flow instructions are conditional jumps and direct calls. First, we start with easier case, that is conditional jumps, to emit attacker-controlled values. The simplest case to get conditional jump after JIT compilation is to use JavaScript if statement. For example, as it is shown in the figure, if we have the following if statement in JavaScript, after compilation, it will give the conditional jump. Depending on the condition, if condition of the conditional jump is true, it will jump over the body of compiled if statement. This means attacker can change the value encoded in displacement field by varying the size of post-compiled size of if statement's body. And what makes it easy for the attacker to precisely change the size of post-compiled if statement's body is that in JIT compilers, all JavaScript statements have predetermined sequence of assembly instruction in which they are compiled. Therefore, attacker knows in advance the number of bytes that is required to compile each JavaScript statement. So for conditional jumps to emit gadgets, the attacker has to create if statement whose body size after compilation equals to the value of the gadget. In our second approach of emitting gadgets, we use direct calls. Displacement in direct calls encodes distance between the callee, that is a function that we are calling, and the caller call instruction. Therefore, to control the value encoded in displacement, we have to put our call instruction at precise location from the callee. However, this is not easy because we do not know in advance where our function will be compiled. However, we can create large functions that contains many enough displacement fields in many enough direct calls that it will cover all possible 3-byte displacements and all possible 3-byte distances from the callee. For example, in the case in the figure, we use instruction I equals I plus j in Chrome. This instruction is compiled into 16 bytes. And if we use this instruction 100,000 hex times, it will be compiled into 1 million hex bytes. And this will emit all possible 3-byte displacements. However, the least significant half byte of all these displacements will be set to the fixed value. However, we can also adjust this fixed value by prepending the JavaScript function with other JavaScript statements. For example, our current fixed value is 5, and to emit system call gadget, for example, we need to add additional 8 bytes to 5. This means if we use I equals 1 JavaScript statement at the beginning, this will give us system call and also all possible 3-byte gadgets that end with a hex digit D. After emitting all these gadgets, we have to find them. However, we cannot read code because we assume code segments are non-readable. However, there are a few places from data segments where we can leak function pointers. These places are compiler's heap or return addresses from the stack, or for example, reading JavaScript objects and leaking code pointers from them. And knowing the address of our function and address of the callee function, it's easy to compute the address of emitted gadgets. Having the basic concepts ready, we will now discuss their applicability in modern browsers. I will start by showing how to emit the following set of gadgets in Chrome. So in this set of gadgets, we set argument register for a system call, and then we execute the system call. We start by emitting system call using direct calls in Chrome. So as we already described, the first step is to align least significant half byte of displacements to hex digit D, and then we will allocate enough direct calls to cover 1 million hex bytes. Note that this doesn't only give us system call gadget, but all possible 3-byte gadgets with the same hex digit. And also, this will cover poprcx and poprdx gadgets, which are 2-byte gadgets. To emit remaining 3-byte gadgets, we use conditional jumps. And we use stacked if statements in JavaScript to emit popr8 and popr9. As popr8 is the value of popr8 gadget is smaller than popr9, inner if statement's body will be compiled to that value. And to reach from popr8 to popr9, we add additional 100 hex bytes. And this will give us both of these gadgets. Gadget generation in Chrome took around 1.3 seconds. However, there are some limitations in Internet Explorer, which doesn't allow us to emit these gadgets easily. For example, Internet Explorer limits the size of a compiled JavaScript function. And JavaScript function code size limitation directly limits us with maximum value of displacement fields that we can encode in conditional jump, because conditional jumps can only be made inside the same function. However, we can still use direct calls, because direct calls encode the distance between two functions and is not limited by function size. However, we are still limited with our previous technique, where we wanted to spray a large enough code. We are not allowed to do so. And further, NOP insertion also diversifies the displacement field emitted by direct calls. And we have to deal with it also. So our plan to emit gadgets in Internet Explorer takes the following steps. We first get the correct code page at correct distance from the callee. Then we fill the page with gadget emitting functions. And finally, we check if direct call emits correct distance, correct displacement, and if not, we recompile the function. So the first step is the following. We compile enough function to get 100 code pages in Internet Explorer. Out of these code pages, we choose the one that is at the correct distance from the callee, that is mass random in our case. And correct distance means that third byte of the displacement will contain sys-rebyte, which is a return instruction. Having correct code page, what we do first is we deallocate it to make space for gadget emitting functions. Then we fill up the space so that next gadget emitting functions that we want to compile will be compiled at the correct place. This will set another hex digit in the displacement field. Next, we compile our gadget emitting function, which contains a statement that is called to mass random, which emits direct call. And displacement field of this direct call will have all the bytes set except for the last one. This least significant half byte of this displacement is randomized by NOP insertion. Therefore, we don't know the value what it contains. To know the value encoded in displacement, we leak return address put there by direct call. We verify if this is at the correct place. If not, if it is at the correct place, it means that we have found the gadget. Otherwise, we decompile the function and go back to step three. Step three will recompile the function again. Now displacement field will also be randomized, and we do so until we find the correct gadget. So we tried this technique in Internet Explorer 11. And we aim to emit POP-A and system call gadget. This is because Internet Explorer by default uses 32-bit JavaScript compiler. So the first two steps of gadget generation took around 8 seconds, and the third step of recompiling syscall took around 2 seconds. But this took 2 seconds per each iteration. So on average, gadget generation in Internet Explorer took around 32 seconds. So to sum up our attack technique, we demonstrated two ways how we can emit arbitrary three-byte gadgets in modern browsers. We use conditional jumps, which works in Firefox and Chrome, but it doesn't work in Internet Explorer because of code size limitation. Another technique is direct calls. It works in Chrome and Firefox. However, it doesn't work against Firefox because Firefox doesn't use direct calls after JIT compilation. The final part of my talk is about how to prevent this gadget emission attack in JIT compiled code. The main idea of this defense will be to take away the leverage from attacker. That is, we convert all relative addresses into absolute ones. That means attacker cannot control the values encoded in them anymore. We start by direct calls. So we distinguish between two cases. The first case, if we know the absolute address of direct call. In this case, we simply move this absolute address into a scratch register and execute an indirect call. The second case is when we know only the relative address of destination. In this case, we have to compute absolute address on the fly at runtime. To do this, we use LIA instruction and add relative address to the instruction pointer. However, now this LIA instruction emits this relative address, which we wanted to hide in the first place. To get rid of this relative address, we split it into two, as it was done already in constant blinding. The first part will add relative address ended with a random key to the instruction pointer, and second part will add the remaining bits, that is, relative address ended with the inverse of a key. The second part of the defense is converting from conditional jumps to safer conditional jumps. The first part, what we do is change from direct jumps into indirect ones. We do this similarly as we did for direct calls. However, there is a problem that we do not have indirect conditional jumps in x86. Therefore, in this case, statements inside the if body will never be executed. To fix this issue, we add additional conditional jump at the beginning. This conditional jump will have the inverse condition as original jump had. That's because if body was executed in original case where only in the case where original condition was false. We implemented our defense in V8, and to measure the performance overhead, we used V8's JavaScript benchmark suite. On average, it showed 2% performance overhead, and however, it showed 26% code size overhead after generation. However, this 26% equals to around 300 kilobytes for the entire benchmark suite, which is still tolerable. We additionally used microbenchmarks to test for worst cases. In microbenchmarks, we used 1 million direct calls and conditional jumps. And the performance decrease was 14% and 10% on average. So to summarize, in this presentation, I have shown that displacement fields can also contain attacker-controlled values. And to make sure that generated code is not influenced by the attacker, JIT compilers have to get rid of them. We also demonstrated that we don't need readable code, and predictable code output from JIT compilers is enough to leak the addresses of emitted gadgets. And finally, we showed how to remove gadgets from the displacement fields by converting relative addressing into indirect one. Thank you for your attention.
Yeah. Thanks, Georgi, for the presentation. And there's the first question.
Hello. Is on. Okay. My name's Pierre. I'm from UC Irvine. I worked on one of the JIT ROP defenses. You might know this.
Yep.
This is more of a comment than a question. The assumption was always that code pointer hiding would be applied uniformly. And it looks like in your paper, you're assuming that it's not applied to the JIT compiled code, which it wasn't in our prototype. And we don't think there's any limitations or reasons why we wouldn't do that. We simply ran out of time before we had to submit the paper. Would you agree with that, that your attack would no longer work if code pointer hiding was applied uniformly?
So there was no implemented code pointer hiding in JIT code. It was mentioned that this can be extended to also protect JIT code. However, this defense technique was using trampolines for code pointer hiding. And in our case, when we also encode gadgets in direct calls, trampolines will now contain all these possible gadgets. So, for example, if we again emit this 100,000 direct calls, now these direct calls will also be in compiled code and in the trampolines. If we don't get code pointers, this will be defended. But we know addresses of trampolines, and all we need to know is somehow leak address of call destination. If everything is hidden, this will be defended. But if there is still some code pointer missing in not complete implementation, then our attack will still work.
That's kind of a circular argument, right? If there's a code pointer not protected, then there's a problem.
Yeah, and another issue is that I think, I mean, we do not try to propose some better defense. So what we wanted to show is that it's important to get rid of gadgets from displacement. But for example, when you hide all code pointers, there are also side channels that can be used. For example, when we use conditional jumps, we created really huge functions. And depending on allocation from compilers, we could somehow know where this function was allocated. And there, after that, because of predictable code output from JIT compiler, we know direct offset where our gadget is. In that case, we have indirect leak without code pointer of our function, and then we have all the gadgets inside conditional jumps, which might still be doable, but it sort of uses some side channels.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, speaker again. Thanks.